Episode 142 of Board Games with Variant Hex is all about Who's Your Con 2024. I'm Kelly, and in this episode, Aaron and I talk about attending a local board game convention. For us, Gen Con happens to be a local board game convention, but this one is more in the traditional sense. It's like 3% the size of Gen Con, and the smallest one we've been to yet. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to myself and Aaron talking about Who's Your Con 2024.
According to legend,
okay,
there was a sword duel in the U.S. in the Indiana State Senate.
What are we talking about?
Somebody's ear got cut off, and they hollered, "Who's ear?"
No, I'm so upset. I'm so upset about that being the opening that I'm gonna need you to Google why Indiana.
That's among the canon. Like there's a couple. That's one of them.
I don't want to move, Aaron, so I'm going to need you to find another reason. And the reason Aaron's bringing this up at all is because we're talking about the local convention that we went to last weekend, Who's Your Con. Now, people from Indiana residents, are referred to as Hoosiers, like H-O-O-S-I-E-R. So if you just read Who's Your Con, it might not even occur to you, even less so if you're not from here. But it's a bit of a wordplay, audio wordplay, that Hoosier sounds like Hoosier. Have you found it?
I found this story and then also one that says it was a derogatory term in the 1830s for people who were poor and had to work hard for their money.
It
became a badge of honor.
It's not getting better. I'm not growing in state pride, but I think that it's great that we don't call ourselves Indians. And we'll leave it at that. We found out about Who's Your Con. Now, I think actually I've heard about it before at Gen Con. Like they had a little booth in a hallway at Gen Con, but hadn't ever gone to it. We saw a flyer. This is after we got back from Dice Tower West in March, maybe like a week later. We saw a flyer at a coffee shop where we so often are that was for this convention. And we thought, well, it's a lot easier just to go to the other side of town. It was on the opposite side of town that we live. Than it is to fly somewhere for a convention. The size of it is close, all things considered, to the size of Dice Tower West, but it is, again, smaller. Dice Tower West is probably 3,000-some people.
Right.
Whereas this is maybe 2,000. It was 2,000 before the pandemic. Haven't seen new numbers. They did it on Easter weekend, and in reading through some of their materials, it sounds like they did it on Easter weekend because they're in a different hotel than they used to be. It's more expensive to get the better dates at the hotel. So they're going to be on Easter weekend for a couple years, improve the relationship with the hotel, hopefully, in a way that makes it easier for them to either grow enough that they have more money so they get a better date, or that they can negotiate a better rate with the hotel. They use tabletop events, which a lot of different conferences use, so it was easy enough to, like, get our badges, browse through the events, all that kind of stuff. We also found out that they take donations for their game library, which has, like, 700-ish games.
Yeah.
You can hear more about us giving all of our games to their game library, and then their Silent Auction as well, in the call episode, which should be released before this one, unless I get crazy and start mixing things up.
In 7 parts.
It is not in 7 parts. It is in 1. That was me and Adam. So, I mean, you weren't on it. But we run through all 60-some games real quick. And I say, like, why I'm getting rid of them. And then we just talk about, you know, general collection curation stuff at the beginning and end of it. So it's kind of a shoot in the breeze episode. But the bulk there in the middle is all the games we donated. So let's do a little recap of kind of how much of the con we were able to attend, because it was a holiday weekend. We had family events to go to, and being in town, you can still keep doing all of your regular life stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, definitely good, but in the sense of attending a conference, if you go out of town, you can't also be doing your laundry for the week and that kind of thing. So it was a little more mixed in with our everyday life. So we'll go through that. We'll talk about the games we played at the con, kind of do a mini, the same way we do Game of the Month. We'll do like a little mini Game of the Con episode, It's not going to be as many as we had for the Dice Tower West review episode.
Yeah, we didn't play as many games yet.
We'll go through that, and then we'll talk about just our general impressions of the con, what we thought about it, would we go back, all that kind of stuff. So the first day, we went to drop off our games on Thursday. The conference really didn't start until Friday morning, and we were both still working. Well, I was working on Friday. You were off on Friday. We went on Thursday to drop off all of our games, so we're kind of like wandering into the hotel. We'd never been, you know, you don't go to a lot of the hotels in your city, probably. So we had never been there. It was also on the other side of town. It was very spacious and nice. So yeah. Not like in a way that sounds like, oh, I'm so surprised there was a nice hotel in town. But it was, I think it was nicer than I expected, like walking in, the way the lobby was nice and big. If you had been staying there, there would have been more than enough space in that like lobby area to bring out a game.
Yeah,
play absolutely. Something. There were lots of like open tables, kind of like a bar sort of thing. So we kind of wandered back, and seemed to be mostly volunteers. But again, you can't just wander through a hotel most times.
Right.
You know, it's not like, I guess you probably could do that even at big conventions. Maybe you can wander around a little bit, but even more so when it's just a hotel. So we found the place where we actually need to donate. We tried to pick up our badges. It didn't work.
There was some scanner problems.
There were some problems. There were the person trying to do the admin wasn't actually super ready. There were other people arriving and getting badges, though. So we just left. There was actually nothing else to do that day. And dropping off the games was just like, here are the games. And they were like, thank you. So it wasn't any kind of big process to get that done. On day one, I worked most of the day. We came to the convention around 3. We got our badges, had a little bit of an issue because when there were errors the day before, it looked like I had already picked up my badge.
Right. And our swag bags.
And our swag bags, there are different like levels of badges you can get. So just to go is pretty cheap. It was like $20-some, maybe $20, $30. Not very much. And even the top level was considerably cheap. Well, cheaper than going to Gen Con. So that top level gets you some little bonus stuff, including a swag bag, which was nice.
The swag bag was very nice.
I didn't really know what to expect from it, but there were a t-shirt, there were tumblers like
a Contigo.
Leak-proof. Yeah, Contigo tumblers. There were a lot of other odds and ends in it. So
eclipse glasses.
There were eclipse glasses. Yeah, because the eclipse is coming up here.
Was there a VIP room that we just didn't go to?
Yes.
No, that's too bad. Yes.
There was some kind of VIP suite or lounge or something. And we weren't, we got there at 3 on Friday. We weren't there as much as we would be for an out of town convention. So it might have been more enticing to use that lounge.
Right. If we had been there for longer.
So yeah, that first day we played games from the library, which we'll talk about in a minute. The food was seemingly, I think it was provided by the hotel. It was kind of like convenient snack food and then like very basic concession stand kind of food. Hot dogs.
Wraps.
Or not hot dogs, hamburgers, chicken fingers, wraps, like veggie wraps, chips, candy, sodas, that kind of thing. So you can
proudly serve Starbucks coffee.
Yes. And that was just the hotel in general. You could get a meal ticket. They only took cash. So if you wanted to use a card, you had to go back to the same place where you got your badge.
Oh, the conference check-in.
Yeah. So you had to go back to the conference check-in and you could buy meal tickets. I think you could have bought them ahead of time too. And like, we're in town. We have our car. That hotel is at near the highway at a pretty major intersection. There's certainly other fast food to get to. That you can walk, and it would not be much of anything to walk to get some more fast food. Then even more so, if you want to go a little further, there'd be plenty of restaurants. So it wasn't as confining as like, I'm here and it'd be so hard to go get food somewhere else, or it'd be so busy because the rest of the city completely unaffected by this local con. So that would have been an issue, but for convenience sake, we did still go ahead, get the meal tickets, got a couple hamburgers that night. And we left around 9. So we were there about 6 hours the first day. The second day, we came in the morning, maybe like 10, 9 yeah. something. And then we left around 1 again, had other things that we had to get to. We played our own game that day. So we didn't play anything out of the library. We're going to have a review on that one soon. It took a long time. It was a Euro game. It took a long time. We brought cash the second day, one for the food, because you can buy it a la carte with cash.
Right.
But if you buy the meal ticket, it is like a set. It's like an entree. It's a side. It's a right. This, it's that. So we bought cash so we could buy things a la carte instead of having to buy the entire meal. And there's a little bit of vendors. There's a small vendor hall.
Yeah.
It was more, there were some games there in the vendor hall, but it was mostly craftspeople.
Yeah.
Who were either, there was a chainmail person. There was someone who like seemed to sew or maybe just resell. I'm not sure. Like different purses and keychains. There were some wooden like dice towers and boxes. There was some 3D printed stuff.
The 3D
printing
stuff,
leather craft,
very high quality.
Yeah. It was so there was a variety of things there to like, you know, pick from, enjoy. Definitely more of a festival kind of vibe for the booths than like game demos and any publishers right. or anything like that. And I think that was one thing I'm gonna jump to a little bit of commentary that it's not that much smaller of a conference, but Dice Tower West is so different because there's still like board game business, it seems, being conducted there. Not a ton, but definitely some.
Yeah, there's a good number of creators. They have
content, I mean, creators. It's
we didn't go
the
to
Dice Tower
the
crew themselves.
At HoosierCon, I think there were some events.
There were events there. We did not attend any events. Again, because our schedule was a little strange. That was day two. So we just kind of were there mostly in the morning. Day three, we came around noon, a little after noon, and then left at four. So it was very similar to day two, where we weren't necessarily there that long. We were there the longest on that first day. We didn't really eat there on the last day on Sunday. We just kind of got some snacks. We played one game from the library.
Yep.
And two of our own. With one of our own that we played with just some strangers who walked up and were like, you're about to start a game? We'd like to be in a game. They have looking for players, like players wanted. And because we were so time limited, we didn't do a lot of that. We probably could have, on Friday, we probably could have walked around, found someone to play a game with. And we just were going for what's everything in the library we haven't played. It wasn't, we didn't play everything we hadn't played, but got through a few different things. And then the other 2 days, we had like hard leaving times.
Right.
And even for playing our own game on Saturday,
oh,
we ran up against it and we had to speed at the end.
Somebody didn't get bitter. They had to rush all their moves in the last game at all.
No, no. Everyone took it really well.
I was super chill about it.
Yeah. And on day three, also, things were already kind of being broken down and it was a lot quieter, even though I think it ended technically at like four, maybe. So, yeah, things were already kind of winding down. I think the last time you could rent from the library was two. So it went from like 8 to midnight Friday, 8 to midnight Saturday. I don't know if they actually started at 8 or 9 on Sunday. And Sunday was Easter.
Right.
As well. So that also might have contributed a little extra to a quieter vibe if there were people who were celebrating Easter and then didn't come. So that's kind of a recap of what we did. All in all, I guess we were there for 6, 10, 14 hours. Over the 3 days. So we weren't there a ton of time.
Right.
But that was just, we thought like, oh yeah, we'll go the whole weekend. And then plans kept stacking up. Other obligations kind of stacked up. And you're not actually out of town.
Right, right.
Like we were for Dice Tower West. You just still end up doing those things. But we still had a good time. We played Paint the Roses, Heat, Pedal to the Metal, The Great Heartland Hauling Company, Carvey, Dive, Love Letter Batman, and Flip Town. So very quickly, we're going to do our game of the con type stuff before we get to our thoughts. So the one that I want to bring back to the table is Carvey. I've already replayed Paint the Roses on Board Game Arena. I had played Flip Town before. So I kind of, those are two that I've already gotten back to the table in a sense. But yeah, Carvey was the game that we played on Saturday and had to rush the ending of.
Right.
So it would be nice to, one, already be more familiar with the rules, because it, of course, it took some time to get through the rules. It's just a Euro game with lots of things to move around, and to really be able to see it through. There's a little bit of variation in the setup, not a ton, but a little bit. And so it will also be interesting to see how much that variation in the setup changes or doesn't fundamentally change.
Right.
Like the choices that you find yourself making, kind of the pacing of the game. So do you have a back to the table between Paint the Roses, Heat, Great Heartland Hauling Company, Carvey, Dive, Love Letter Batman, and Flip Town.
I feel like Back to the Table for me is the Heat game. The racing game was really fun.
It was really fun. Yeah,
it was super fun. I'm gonna switch. This is spoilers. Now, that's gonna be my game of the con. My Back to the Table is Dive, which is the one we played, and it's just a really cute game, and I think you could play it with literally anyone.
Yeah, it's all these stacked transparent sheets that have different kinds of fish and aquatic life on them. And you're trying to guess, since they're transparent but painted on, it's all kind of layered. And as it gets deeper, it's harder to tell how many layers down it is. And that's the whole game. It's like a programming action game, and you're trying to program your dive and see if you can successfully get through the layers of the ocean.
It's 2 seconds to learn. It's not a brain teaser.
Yeah.
Super fun.
Yeah. Now for the collection, I'm going to be honest. I said Dive, and it's only because
I want to buy Dive.
We own Dive.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, good news
don't
for you.
Don't get rid of it.
Well, exactly. I don't know that it's a game I need to own.
How will we play it?
Well, I think I'm saying that, now it's true that we probably won't run into it that often, but right. I'm saying, like, I don't like it so much that I feel like I need to own it over other lightweight, similar games. It did play pretty quick. Overall, yeah. Once you kind of get into it. And in some ways, maybe I feel like maybe that's what I don't like, is that it's quick and not too strategic. I don't know. I just feel like it's fine. It just didn't rise up to kind of a level for me. It didn't endear itself to me so much
I felt we could
keep it.
I feel like we could invite our non-gaming friends and family to play more games with us, and that would facilitate that very nicely.
Yeah, I think that's true. And there is the way that we have the games arranged right now. We have, like, one-player games, and that kind of gets priority. All the one-player games, if it has a one-player mode, it goes on that shelf. We have IP games and oversized games on a shelf. We have two-player games together. And there is a spot that is for, like, not party games, but just casual. If people come over and want to play a game, I'm probably going to that section. I'm going to that shelf first to pull things off instead of kind of piecing through everything else. So regardless of play count, really, that's another one where things will just go over there. And I definitely see Dive fitting in maybe a little more there than you and I playing a lot of Dive.
Oh, I don't want to play Dive with just you.
Okay. Well, I put a pretty high priority on that, and I have a pretty low priority, low overall count of games that I want to keep for those occasions with someone else. So for me, it didn't really like break through, you know, Strikes over there, things like that. Now I'd probably still rather play Strike, I think, than Dive.
Huh.
Anyways, that was mine. What was yours for the collection?
The collection?
The one you want to get rid of.
Flip Town.
Oh, Flip Town. Yeah, I'm keeping Flip Town because I'm going to play it by myself and have a lovely time. Flip Town is, I feel like it's almost every episode that I'm mentioning the Motor City Gameworks collection.
Oh, is that Motor City?
It is
not. I did not know that. Oh.
It is not, but it feels exactly like those games. I think
it's too much.
It comes with a whiteboard instead of coming with sheets. It would be a two-sheet, flip and write, roll and write, verb and write, whatever you want to say, game. You have a deck of standard cards that you're using. You've got these sheets. There's combos. There's this thing about building a poker hand slowly turn over turn. It feels very much like those other games. French Quarter, Motor City, Three Sisters, and Flee the Dice Game. I feel like I'm mentioning them on every episode, and I'm sure that we're now running short on that. Like, surely I won't be talking about these all the time, but
I feel like you just came up with a good idea for a game, though. You come up with a game. Mm. The game is called Verb and Write. And there's some decision mechanic where before every turn you decide whether you're rolling the thing, flipping the thing, and then it gives you different actions, and it's just called Verb and Write. It's pretty fun.
You know what? I'm not a game designer. That is pretty fun. I've heard Verb and Write before, not my original idea, but that if you were picking between the verbs of that style of game.
And then each of the different verbs offered potentially different types of actions.
So I mean,
you know what? You know what? We're doing it.
You know, we're not. I'm going to go ahead and give that for idea for free for anyone listening. Just give us a little shout out. We'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
So now, game of the con. You said that yours is going to be Heat because you changed your Back to the Table to Dive.
Yeah, because I was going to then, I was like, oh, I'm going to do Dive and back and Heat. And then I was like, well, I can't just give Dive the game of the con. That's rubbish. I have to switch. So no, Heat was a racing. I think it's the best of all of the racing games we've played. So it's, you know, it's a little like Downforce. It's a little like
Flamme Rouge.
It's a little like
Formula D.
It's, yes. But it's just, it was more fun than all of those.
And that is the other game that we're going to do a full review on. So that episode will be coming a little later. We probably won't talk too much more about the mechanics as a result. But I also picked Heat for my game of the con.
Nice.
I would like to buy the Heartland game as well, Heartland Hauling Company. I found out today that it's kind of old. It's like a 10-year-old game.
Oh.
I think that means that maybe I'll be able to pick it up used pretty cheap. It's not a very big, it's a small box game. But I very much like the concept of pick up and deliver. I keep trying pick up and deliver games and not liking them. But that one was a good small box pick up and deliver game that I kind of vibed with. So nice. That's a bit of an honorable mention. But yeah, Heat for all the same reasons. It wasn't too hard to learn. We just did one lap.
Yep. Yeah, could have done more.
And the game, what's slowing me down right now about, you know, adding it to our collection is that it's expensive. Everywhere I've looked for it, it's either like out of stock or expensive. I saw a thing for, and I didn't actually even click the thing for Amazon. It's at $129 on Amazon. Ooh. The regular retail price, I think, is something around $75 for it. And it does come with four boards. So that's four different maps, which is a good number. But this is going to be like tiny spoiler for things I'm also going to say in the review. I'd love for it to get a Target edition the way that Downforce did.
Oh, right.
Now, would I ultimately buy the Target edition? Probably not. Would that maybe help drive down the price of the regular one? Hopefully, because it would just be more in production. But yeah, if they just had one board, one double-sided board instead of two double-sided boards, and, you know, just bring it down for a few less options and have a core game. I don't know. Yeah, it's just a little expensive to actually buy it. It is available on Board Game Arena, though.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah,
nice.
As is Paint the Roses is available on Board Game Arena 2. I don't think any of the other games that we played at the con. Well, Love Letter.
Oh, well.
Love Letter, Batman. I was under the impression that some of these love letters were different. And so far, no. None of them are different. So I think I'm going to stop seeking those out. So, yeah, that's our quick overview of the actual game part. So now, our general thoughts on who's your con, on going to a small local convention. What did you think about it?
I think that it is nice to support local gaming.
Yeah.
We often, when we go to these cons, I would like to do it more if we were going to play with people we didn't know more.
Mm-hmm.
This time, except for the one exception of the people who came up to us when we weren't seeking other players.
Yeah, we weren't trying.
I feel like we could just do that at home in more comfortable chairs.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of games. And like, there was a nice thing about like playing some games that we don't have access to or that are out of print. So like, that's not a bad idea. And I would still probably go just for that, but it's not like my favorite. Like, I think Dice Tower West was more in like, I don't want to go to Vegas, but
yes.
I don't really like that. But like, Dice Tower West was definitely a different kind of engaging experience in a different way.
You're saying that was kind of like a sweet spot.
It was a sweet spot.
Yeah.
There was the right number of creators, the right number of industry, the right number of, it just kind of felt big, and this kind of felt small.
Yes.
But I thought that the exhibit hall and the artists were nice. Like, there was some cool stuff there. We bought some stuff.
Yes.
And the library was good. The people were, the organizers were incredibly nice. The people in general, they were nice. So I think, you know, small con, like, especially if you want to play with other people, then I think that's what you're going for, to like put yourself around other like, you know, people that want to play. But I think for us, if we're going to go and play games we own at a, I could stay home.
And we did, I took games that were on our to play list, Shelf of Opportunity, Shelf of Shame, however you want to phrase it. So I took games that we had been trying to get around to and didn't. So this was just a more formal prompting to like, hey, spend more time playing your games this weekend. Their library being somewhere around 700 and ours, now I just donated 60 some games. I have sent games to some friends. I have asked friends to take games. I'd say overall this year, I've maybe gotten rid of upwards of 80 some games. I have not looked yet because I haven't updated
the
board game collection on Board Game Geek or in the BG Stats app. But I think that we were over 400 games.
Right.
So when you have 400 games at home that you've chosen,
Right.
Even if you're going to get rid of some of them, you have 400 games at home that you've chosen. The draw of the library alone isn't that great.
No, but there was good gameplay.
That's something different than Dice Tower West, which isn't much bigger of a convention, but has a very big convention feel, I think, because they have the resources of being content creators and kind of connected to the industry tighter than Hoosier Con. There wasn't like a lot of industry representation. And I don't know how many board game industry things might be Midwestern.
Right.
I don't know how many events maybe showcased a little more of that. And they were just things that we didn't see.
Right, right.
But it did feel, it felt more independent, felt more homegrown. It did feel a lot smaller. And it's the first one we've gone to. So I think it's hard to compare. I think you have to compare conventions at size. And I don't think that it's comparable to Dice Tower West.
Right, but I think we're probably going to go back next year. So that's,
I think we go back. And I definitely agree with your statement of it's a good thing to support. We're here in the Midwest, and inside of the city, there are all kinds of viewpoints, including progressive ones. And when you go outside the city, the progressive viewpoints dwindle dramatically. We have some college towns, and then outside of that, I guess you can get up near Chicago. So there were a lot of different booths or just, I think, people getting the opportunity to live their life as they would like.
Yeah.
And live their progressive values in a safe place. Even though we still, even walking by, heard like some religious conservative debates. Also, the con themselves, this is like an example of things where you think, well, I want to support this because I want this to happen in my city, even if it's happening imperfectly. For the bathrooms, and I don't know about all the bathrooms, but kind of the main bathrooms anyway, they just put gender-neutral signs over the actual signs that are on the door. I'm certain that that's not what was behind the signs. I'm sure it was just a men's bathroom and a women's bathroom that had been there on those doors since the hotel was built. Seemingly at least 40 years ago, I would guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had a laminated sign that said gender neutral, and they had icons showing that one of the bathrooms had urinals and the other one did not. And I will confirm that people coming in and out of the bathrooms of seemingly whichever gender. So it seemed that, yes, they were being used as gender neutral. It didn't then also seem that everyone was ignoring the signs.
Yeah. And I think we started the episode by talking about how the Hoosier State got its name. And
yeah,
it didn't go very well. But
I mean, we got a long walk.
But later it's been come to be known as a word that like hints at hospitality. And I think Hoosier Con is definitely an all are welcome kind of place.
Yeah. And I think that's something that people do say about Gen Con ultimately. I think that maybe people hear about the news from our state in between Gen Cons and say, like, I don't really want to give tourism dollars to Indiana. I understand the logical point. But a lot of this stuff I've talked about in other Gen Con episodes before. That's why we need people coming here, so that the other people here can see that there's nothing that they don't need to keep making these kinds of laws, in part. Like, that's one of the things that exposure does for that. So I think that is that hospitality and that kindness. You do see it. I think it is also there at Gen Con. I think it was here at Hoosier Con. So we intend to keep donating. Now that's my plan. For all of my culling, I think I'm going to save it up all year and give it to Hoosier Con like just the week before or leading up, because we did both see our games in the library. We saw our games in the silent auction. It helps them raise money for future cons. So I feel like ultimately, at first, it was just an easy out, but it was actually pretty fulfilling to be able to do that. So yeah, I think we will be back. It will be interesting to see if we go to other very small cons.
Right.
Because there's probably some in Chicago, things like that, that we could go to and compare them to as well. And I don't know that it's ever a thing that we're going to like stay in the hotel and really live it up
like
all
live
weekend.
Live it up, yeah. Even for Gen Con. It's so expensive. Maybe that's what we're doing next week.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 142. Be sure to subscribe to know when new episodes drop. You can follow us on Instagram, X, and Twitch at VariantHex. We have a website and a blog at varianthex.com. And you can email us at podcast@varianthex.com. We had a big month of gaming in March, which means we have a lot of episodes planned and recorded, including lots of reviews. But up first, the next episode will be our Game of the Month for March, unless you're listening to these in reverse, in which case you have 141 more episodes headed your way, the next one being about collection curation and culling games. And that's all for now. Thank you so much for spending your time with us today.